got Steve ahead of me, 1,000 feet above.
These are the chemtrails, and he's spraying all over Earth.
. 2022 is the busiest year we've ever had at the Nomadic Aviation Group. We flew over 300 trips, onboarded a bunch of new pilots, and beefed up our planning and administrative team. We also landed several new large lessor clients, which will surely continue to grow our operations volume and revenues for years to come. While this in itself was a great accomplishment, the fact that we did it all less than a year after transitioning to a new partnership structure and completely new company made it all the more impressive. When Bob and I closed down Jet Test and launched Nomadic in 2021, we expected some growing pains and thought it would be a year or two before things stabilized, but what we didn't expect was for the trip volume to increase during the transition period. While on social media, Bob and I receive a lot of the credit for the success of the company, the reality is, behind the scenes, we have an extremely skilled team managing the ops planning, dispatch, trip accounting, ground support, legal, HR, and tech ops processes. While as managing partners, the two of us are regularly involved in all facets of the business, it would be physically impossible for us to do everything the way we used to do in early years. Both Bob and I are extremely grateful for the talented and dedicated individuals that make Nomadic such a formidable operation, and toward the end of 2022, we decided to host an end-of-year celebration in Hawaii at the Turtle Bay Resort. Our entire back-office team and their families were invited to a company-paid retreat, and although not everyone was able to attend, the trip was a huge success. We all got the chance to relax and enjoy a nice break before getting back into the action. The action that would commence with a beast of an operation just days after we all returned home. The mission was to move two A320neos out of Hyderabad, India, on an early return from the Indian carrier Go Air. Both aircraft would be moved to two different locations in Turkey on a Cayman registration, where they'd be placed into heavy maintenance before deployment to a new lessee.
It sounds like cockpit casual in here.
Bob flew out to meet me in Philly from his house in Phoenix to kick things off. Our ride to India was on Qatar Airways, my favorite. The first leg was Philadelphia to Doha nonstop on an A350 with Q suites. The 12-hour overnight long haul is a staple run for me and how I normally get to Asia to start trips. I personally prefer the rear-facing window seats, and I was able to nab one for both Bob and I when we bought our tickets the day before departure. In Doha, we'd have a few hours to kill in the lounge before our flight to Hyderabad, which was operated by a Qatar Airways 787 Dreamliner.
Let's go.
Go where?
Hyderabad.
Qatar's 787 fleet doesn't have Q suites, although they're starting to upgrade them with a similar style interior. This one, however, was in the original factory delivered configuration, and Bob and I were seated in a center two-seat cluster. The ride to Hyderabad was a short 3.5 hours, and we both dozed off after our meals, then woke up on final approach. The roughly 20-hour trip to India eastbound with a short lounge layover in the middle makes it really easy to lose track of time, so we were both discombobulated by the time we cleared customs after midnight on arrival. Fortunately, we had well over 24 hours planned on the ground in Hyderabad before any sort of plan to fly the first of the two Neos over to Turkey. This trip had been on our schedule for about 2 months because the planning and documentation to extract aircraft from India is complicated. The Cayman Registry was used as a transient solution to simplify and expedite the technical approvals. Bob and I had been planning to do this back-to-back trip since the beginning to ensure things came together smoothly.
It's Monday, January 9th, and Bob and I are here in Hyderabad, India. We're kind of in a tech center type area, this Gachibowli. It's actually not a great location as far as things to do, so we're gonna have to take a taxi into town. Because we got in here really more than 24 hours in advance of our flight, we're gonna take the opportunity to really explore the city, eat some good Indian food. Let the adventure begin.
Wait, that's not us.
Oh, that one's not us. All right, the adventure will have to wait.
Our driver doesn't look local.
I didn't even see.
Tall, bald white guy.
Oh, geez. Oh, we get the big one.
Is that it?
Yeah, that's it, man. That's us.
We typically get a handful of India trips every year. It's not a frequent destination for us, but trips pop up from time to time, and I normally try to fly them when they do. Over the years, I've been to a few Indian cities, Mumbai, New Delhi, Chennai, and of course Hyderabad. Each city has a different feel to it, and all of them, well, all of them that I've seen anyway, are very congested. The traffic is downright insane. The air reeks of diesel exhaust, and there are people literally everywhere. Despite this chaotic environment, I actually have a soft spot for this country. I love it. With a full day to acclimate to the time zone ahead of what would be a busy week operating back-to-back ferry flights, Bob and I set out to find some good biryani, the tasty rice dish that Hyderabad is known for. Since our hotel was sort of far away from all the action, I consulted with the concierge about where to find the best biryani and where to get into the mix with the street vendors and locals. He immediately reverted with Charminar, a famous district in the center of town with a four-spire monument bearing the same name. He arranged a car and a driver for the day, and we set off ready to eat some good food and get some good video. First stop, an ATM machine to grab some rupees.
Did you get some money? Yeah, he left. With your phone? Hey, check it out. There's a guy who just got out with a gun. There. And now he's looking at us. Yeah, he didn't like that.
What, he filming his movie?
Yeah.
Did you get it?
He just stared me down.
Yeah. Well, who was up with the gun? The gun guy.
Sure. I think he was the ATM guy.
I think
he's refilling the machine.
They called us because they called because they saw us coming in.
Yeah, there's two Americans coming in. They're going to clean us out.
Rupees, like, so I had a ton of rupees that just, like, expired. Did you have that?
Oh, yeah. All the time. That's the problem with these countries is what happens is they, like, reset the currency and they reissue it.
Yeah.
And so all the old stuff is worthless.
With cash in hand, we continued our hour-long trek in traffic across town. When the concierge recommended Charminar, he gave us a very clear disclaimer. He said we would be hassled and followed by beggars, and that it would be extremely chaotic, and that we might prefer to go to somewhere quieter and more upscale. I didn't even give it a second thought. Beggars and chaos? That sounds exactly like what we're looking for.
No strawberries.
No, thanks. No. I don't like them. I don't even like them.
All right, giddy up.
All right, let's go.
It's already started.
Yeah. Make sure we don't get hit by a fucking motorcycle here.
I'm fascinated by the chaos that abounds the streets of most Indian cities. The colors are vibrant, the level of activity is mind-boggling, and the smells of the street food finish the scene with the spicy notes that you can almost smell just by simply watching the video. I'm convinced that you can find virtually anything you want on these streets, and the level of activity remains constant from sunrise to sunset and even into the evening 7 days a week. Despite it being the first week of January, it was really warm outside. It doesn't get cold in Hyderabad. It's a temperate climate where the temperature only varies by a few degrees from season to season.
Yeah, cockpit casual. You guys should check it out. You'll be on it in a couple, maybe in 1 month. Yeah. So what's your name?
Mohammad Najamil.
Say it again.
Mohammad Najamil.
Okay. I'm Steve. Real easy, Steve.
What about you?
My name is Bob.
You on your way home from school?
College.
Oh, college. Very cool. What are you studying?
I'm BT.
Business?
Maths, business, chemistry.
Chemistry.
Oh, okay.
Engineering.
Engineers. Oh, you guys are smart.
We actually invited those college kids to lunch, but they declined the invite because they had to get back to class. College kids declining a free lunch? Where the hell am I? Anyway, we did follow their biryani recommendation and walked up the road a bit to Paradise. That's the name of the joint. The restaurant was located on the second floor of a building along the square facing the Charminar Monument. It seemed busy, which naturally means that it's good, right?
This place is filling up.
Yeah, I think we made a good choice. We came upstairs here to Paradise Biryani. It's a cool little restaurant. So, where are we with ops for tomorrow, man?
Who knows? This is the way it always goes.
What are the chances that you think we're going to get out of here tomorrow?
We'll get out of here tomorrow.
You think?
But not at 8 o'clock in the morning.
Like what time? Sundown?
Well, yeah, of course. That's always when we leave.
The sundown call
for it. We get out there at 6 o'clock in the morning and don't leave until the sun actually sets. And then we got to go fly for 10 hours.
Yeah. So what do you got there, bub?
So good.
It was quite good.
Biryani. It's spicy.
It's biryani. Chicken biryani. It is spicy.
It's quite good. Oh, perfect. You just throw them over there.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. Yeah, this is good stuff. Very good.
We finished up our lunch and headed back to the car. Now, I know better than to fall for the scam, but figured for the benefit of this video, I'd hand a few rupees off to some beggars as a lesson to all of you why not to do it. Now, before you write me off as a heartless prick unwilling to give a few bucks to pleading mothers with their hungry babies, let me stop you right there.
No more. That's all I have.
The money you hand them doesn't go to them. Not directly, anyway. Most of the younger, healthy women holding babies are part of a semi-organized ring. They follow and plead, and eventually you give in and hand over some cash, but it doesn't stop there. Before you know it, you're surrounded on all sides and can't even think because of the grabbing, pleading, and swarming. Ultimately, these professionals report to their ringleader, handing off the lion's share of their take, and in return, they get a very small amount to keep for themselves. It's sad, especially when you see the ones that maim themselves in an attempt to generate more money from handouts. The babies, not even theirs normally. It's a terrible situation for all of them, and I can't help but want to hand them some money that they clearly need more than me, but the reality is, it's not what you think.
Only Bob has.
He has no more money.
It took us damn near 30 minutes to find our ride home, and in that time, I gave away the majority of my rupees to the scammers. I kept some for taxis and to tip our driver, but I didn't really need that cash anyway. And like I mentioned earlier, it seems like every time I go back to India, the leftover cash from the previous trip becomes superseded and is no longer valid as legal tender. Said and done, our excursion lasted about 4 hours, two of which was in Charminar for lunch and about an hour drive in each direction in extremely dense traffic. We got back to the hotel and hit the hay early. We had a no dark 30 start in the morning, but whether we'd actually get out of there early, well, that was yet to be seen. Most of the time on ferry flights, especially ones originating in foreign countries, we arrive at the airport like anyone else, the main terminal entrance. We either hail a cab at the hotel or our handlers arrange a car or van for us. At some point before the trip, normally the night before departure, we coordinate with the on-site technical rep or a representative of our client to set up aircraft access. 9 times out of 10, the meeting point is a closed ticket counter or an information desk or even a fast food joint in the ticketing area. There, we normally find 2 to 3 handling agents wearing reflective vests and holding our flight paperwork. This is typically a folder with the day's flight plans, Gendex, weather, and other relevant documentation. There they match our names on the Gendek to our ID badges to verify we are who we say we are. And once that's established, we're escorted to the front of the security line and then to a customs agent to clear outbound, just like any other passenger traveling out of the airport. From there, we're normally escorted to a closed gate where our badges are once again matched to the paperwork before we get on a bus that drives us out to the aircraft parked on a hard stand or at a maintenance facility, which is typically off in a remote corner away from the passenger terminals. I know I sound like a broken record when I constantly say that we're always late getting out of anywhere, and I know I set you all up for what would certainly be a long day of sitting around, but within 10 minutes of boarding the bus, we found ourselves stopped at the MRO gate with our jet being pulled out. Bob and I could hardly believe it. We were actually going to depart on time? Things were really looking up. We arrived at the jet and started going through our pre-flight. This was the first of two A320neos, fairly new ones, that were leased to Go, an Indian low-cost carrier that at the time was still operating, but having real financial problems. Our client, the lessor, saw the writing on the wall early and decided to pull the trigger on extraction before the shit hit the fan, a decision which turned out to be a really smart one.
Hi, here we are at Hyderabad Airport. Airbus A320neo.
For those not up to speed, the NEO stands for New Engine Option, so the A320neo is basically a regular Airbus with a few tweaks to the flight control modes, but otherwise operationally identical to the previous A320 series to pilots. There are actually two engine options for the A320neo, the CFM LEAP and the Pratt & Whitney GTF, which stands for Geared Turbofan. Without getting too technical, the basic concept is that the new engine options use advanced materials and technologies on a higher bypass fan in order to operate with far better fuel economy. These aircraft were equipped with the Pratt & Whitney GTF engines. An engine's bypass ratio is the comparison of air that flows through the core section, i.e. the compressors, burners, and turbines, versus the air exhausted by the fan, which bypasses the core section and their contribution to thrust. High-bypassed engines, by design, have much larger diameter cross-section and appear much larger on wing. You can clearly see how much of the thrust is supplied by bypassed fan air versus exhausted burned air when you look at the engine from behind.
Hello, Hyderabad. Victor Papa, Charlie India, uniform.
God, I hate saying this.
Victor Papa, Charlie India, uniform.
Victor Papa, Charlie India, uniform. We are on Bravo 1, holding short 27 right, ready to start engines.
Victor Papa, Charlie India, uniform. Start up approved runway 09 right, QNH 1021.
1021, and we're cleared to start. Victor Papa, Charlie India, uniform.
The NEOs are really fuel efficient, so I was pretty shocked when I saw we were scheduled for a fuel stop in Cairo. This was because of the intensely strong headwinds along our route. Hyderabad to Cairo was scheduled at 8 hours. With these winds, our destination of Istanbul was nearly 11 hours of flying away and outside of our range for the aircraft with reserves. Our route of flight out of central India took us due west across the Arabian Sea, just north of Muscat over the Persian Gulf, across the UAE directly overhead Dubai, across Saudi Arabia over the Red Sea, and into Cairo. The corridor across the Persian Gulf and Saudi Arabia is a very busy one with a ton of long-haul international traffic.
Shamshabad ground, red 95001, good morning.
After starting up, we began our taxi out for a shockingly on-time departure. You might notice our call sign for the mission was Victor Papa Charlie India Uniform, the aircraft's registration mark instead of the usual nomadic call sign. This was due to a mistake in the filing process where the registration was accidentally placed into the call sign block by a third-party handling agent. The time it would have taken to correct the mistake wasn't worth the delay, so we just went with it.
And confirm it was to hold short Alpha 8 for Victor Papa Charlie India Uniform.
West India Uniform, Roger. Hold at holding point Alpha 8, monitor 118.145. Confirm persons on board through security.
Two persons on board.
Roger, good day.
Here's Alpha 8. Contact the tower.
West India Uniform, contact tower 118.145.
45, Victor Papa Charlie India Uniform. Thank you.
Victor Papa Charlie India Uniform Tower, wind 100 degrees 06 knots, runway 09 right, clear for takeoff.
09 right, clear for takeoff, Victor Papa Charlie India Uniform.
Here we go.
Fucking Intel Park, anything?
I did.
Okay.
You ready?
Yep. Aye, aye, Captain.
Alright.
Mark is our dispatcher and generally sitting awake waiting for us to tell him we're off with a Slack message so that he can send a movement message to our client and the handlers down line.
Okay, climb up to 260 unrestricted, Victor Papa, Charlie India Uniform.
Soon as the fast-paced chaos of the departure and climb out was behind us, I took a short stroll to the back to stretch my legs and have a peek around. The airplane was virtually new, definitely atypical for a narrow-body ferry out of India. It even still had that new car smell.
754, Bravo.
Once we got up to cruise, it was time to eat. Neither of us had eaten anything since our lunch downtown the day before, and we were starving. We self-catered from the hotel, but it smelled terrible, sort of like vomit, actually, so we grabbed some snacks from the terminal just in case it was as bad as it smelled.
Getting my cornflakes this morning. Chocolate milk, cornflakes. It's not breakfast. Chocolate bars and
like
Rice Krispies in it.
Not like cornflakes in it?
No, it's more like Rice Krispies. Those chocolate bars. I can't remember the name of it. It's in a blue and white packaging.
Chocolate bar? Oh, a Nestle Crunch.
Yeah, Nestle Crunch. All right, this is what we do at 38,000 feet when we're cruising along.
We record ourselves unboxing nasty food.
The unboxing of food.
So last night we ordered catering. Well, Bob had fallen asleep already, so I called down the front desk. That'll come in handy. Called down to the front desk and I said, hey, get any food made. I said they could do sandwiches. So I don't know if they made them last night or this morning.
Yeah.
French fries smell decent. They're really cold though, so I'm gonna heat those up.
Yeah, if put them in the oven, they might turn out okay.
That's a giant vat of ketchup. Hopefully that is money in it.
Yeah. That's exactly what's in it.
Alright, I'm gonna eat this.
Alright, what's in the foil? Maybe you should have heated that up.
You got brown bread, a Friday. It's actually...
Yeah, it doesn't look bad, actually.
Now there's lettuce in this meat grate. no, it doesn't look bad. Let's see.
What, are you going to eat it? You actually going to take a bite?
What's that white stuff? Oh, that's egg. What's that white stuff?
I hope it's not mayonnaise.
It's not. It's hard.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's not too bad.
Edible?
There's bacon on it.
There is?
Yeah.
I wasn't sure if they had bacon down there or not. I mean,
yeah, they do.
It seemed to be like a lot of Muslim population down there.
Yeah.
Mealtime in the bus is far better than mealtime in a Boeing. The retractable tray table is key, and the entire Airbus narrowbody cockpit is spacious and comfortable. Airbus really got the ergonomics right on the 320.
A little moderate turbulence here at 380 continually. Arabian Sea. Nothing out here but Arabian Sea.
Once the Arabian Sea becomes the Gulf of Oman, the airspace becomes significantly busier. The constant flow of traffic in and out of Dubai, Abu Dhabi, Muscat, Doha, and Bahrain makes the corridor one of the busiest in the world for passenger traffic, and there's never a shortage of in-flight wide-body spotting opportunities when passing through. Radar coverage and ATC is really good here, but once you get over the Persian Gulf, it's fairly commonplace to experience some GPS signal jamming from the Iranian side. It's not a problem for us, though. The aircraft are equipped and the crews are trained to deal with the situation when it arises. Hands down, the most recognizable city in the world from crews and the flight levels is Dubai. Often it can get pretty hazy in this area, but that wasn't the case for us on this leg. It's wild to see what's left of the World Island Project, the scattered man-made archipelago originally intended to be sold off as personal residence island parcels. The project was abandoned in 2008 after the financial crisis, and you can really see that nature's taken its course on the development. Many of the islands have eroded and faded together, and it barely resembles its original design at this point. After 8 hours of slogging along with over 100 knots of wind in our face across the Arabian Sea and over the United Arab Emirates and Qatar, across all of Saudi Arabia east to west, we started our descent into Cairo as we crossed the Red Sea. There was hardly a cloud in the sky, but the visibility on the ground in Cairo was calling under a mile. The surface winds were whipping up dust, and we'd have to shoot an ILS approach to get in. Cairo is a fairly routine stop for us at Nomadic, and much like with this trip, often serves as a last-minute tech stop when winds prohibit an otherwise further ferry leg. The sand-colored buildings and densely arranged subdivisions are beautiful and unique when viewed from the air. On days with better visibility, we can often see the pyramids when landing east, which is the normal configuration for the airport.
Approach lights in sight.
500. runway in sight, landing.
400.
Landing free.
Tower semi, come up down 71 Alpha.
Line
of Anuit, runway 05, left Malvern, 17.
Sequence 50, 40, 30, 20, retard, 10, 7, 5,
7.
I have 7.
Victor Baba Charlie, India, inform on ground vacate runway to the left via Echo 3 after vacating ground 121.9.
Utter exit 3 and 121.9. Thank you, Victor Papa Charlie, India, inform.
Yes.
I'm gonna go tell him 6.4 in the fuel, and I'm gonna do the walk around. You gonna load it up, Fox? Yeah. All right.
Trying to find out if we're gonna need to send a state crew or not.
Why? What's going on?
Nobody's heard from fucking Eddie or anybody.
Oh, Eddie, that the 73 Max.
Yeah.
What the hell?
Simply just a fucking set of over here and said not to.
Yeah. Let me see if we're chocked, and then we can release those brakes because it is. Goddamn hot brakes. What's the temp on the brakes now?
No, any questions about that push brake?
No, it's coming down.
We didn't need a whole lot of fuel in Cairo. The flight up to Istanbul's Atatürk Airport was only scheduled at 1 hour and 42 minutes. The weather forecast was good, and we wanted to hurry up and get into rest because our flight back to Hyderabad was scheduled for the next day. The sandwiches and chocolate bars were long gone, so we were also hungry. And as usual, our planning team set us up with a couple of pizzas in Cairo to hold us over for the rest of the journey.
Yeah. So 6.3.
I'm good with that.
6.4. Yeah, sounds good to me. 6.4. Cool. Yes. Those are ketchup packets with the pizza, Bob. It actually, you know, as gross as it is and as much as I hate ketchup, it might actually improve this.
Well, I guess it's optional if you want tomato sauce. I guess that's tomato sauce.
Pizza with ketchup. We've sunk into a new low. And I'm not supposed to be off the carbs, but, you know, I really haven't eaten anything other than that egg sandwich like 8 hours ago.
I'm going to go hungry. I'm eating it anyway.
Dude, I'm on my second piece.
I don't think there is any sauce.
There it is, but it's dry. Dry sauce. It's like a dry rub.
Thank you.
Ship one, done.
Done.
Let's go get another one.
The plan was to arrive here in Istanbul, immediately head up to the main airport and get on Emirates and go to Dubai and then back to Hyderabad to pick up the second airplane. And unfortunately, the delay this morning made that impossible. We didn't have enough time to catch that Emirates flight. So we're going to stay here in Istanbul at the hotel, JW Marriott, right by the old Ataturk Airport, which is where we dropped the aircraft off at. And instead of heading right back tonight, we're going to do it tomorrow on Qatar. So we're going to head on Qatar at 2 p.m. Sorry, I'm tired. 2 p.m. Connect in Doha, about an hour connection. Get into Hyderabad again at 2 a.m. I think. And instead of having to just sleep for a couple hours, we're actually gonna delay the departure till noon on Thursday. It's a whirlwind of a trip. Anyway, here we are in Istanbul. Gorgeous views of the water out there, which I guess you can't see anything. I can't open the door, so I guess you're shit out of luck. Leave here soon. I think it's about 9 a.m. I woke up at about 7:30 and it was so unbelievably dark outside. It was still pitch black. I was shocked how dark it was at 7:30. Anyway, we're gonna head out to the airport at 10 and it's another long day and then we get to do it all over again.
I normally get to Turkey a few times per year and I always look forward to it. Istanbul is definitely one of the great cities of the world for a lot of reasons, not the least of which is the food. The Turks know how to cook and even the smallest hotel breakfast spread is overwhelming and amazing. I'd rate the breakfast spread at the JW Marriott probably at an 8 out of 10 on the Turkish scale, which is nothing short of a 10 out of 10 on the global scale. Pro tip, if you're ever booking a stay in Turkey and they ask if you want breakfast included, the answer is always yes.
We're back on the road again.
I know. And, I want to just lay in bed all day today.
We were delayed a bit out of Istanbul, but still had time to make our connection in Doha. Our ride was another Qatar A350, then 787, just like before.
You alright, man?
Bless you. last run. Last run to Hyderabad.
Yeah, for now. For this week.
Yeah, for this week.
I'd say it felt like Groundhog Day, getting back on Qatar Airways to Doha and then back to Hyderabad again a mere 3 days after we had just done it. But honestly, it really didn't. 3 days ago felt like 3 months ago at that point. These rapid-fire trips where we bounce from one plane to another and cover thousands of miles in every direction over a short period of time have a way of bending the space-time continuum for us in the moment. Minutes sometimes feel like hours, days like weeks. It's especially bad on those long eastbound trips where we see the sun rise and set twice in a leg. The weirdest part is once we get home, the whole trip flew by in an instant, and often I can't even remember little details that happened until I review the video. Then I say to myself, oh yeah, forgot about that.
It's 3:53 a.m. After our delays, right? So we weren't going, you know, we don't have as long. We're departing tomorrow at noon. So we came in and we're staying at the Novotel, which is like 5 minutes from the airport. And so, you know, I get into the place, they give me it's like a regular hotel, right? So I go into my room here. Bob is a normal room. Check this shit out. So like you walk in and like there's like nothing, right? So I walked in at first and I'm like, all right, why are there doors there? What's going on? It's got a kitchen. It's got a dining room, a living room, an office, another door. Mind you, we haven't seen any bedrooms yet. First, I walk into this right door, door number one, put stuff down. And I'm like, all right, well, it's kind of a meager room, but whatever. It's cool. There's a bathroom. Then walk into this one. And this is clearly the master. By the way, thanks, AJ, for the cookies. That's awesome of you. I really appreciate it. There's a giant safe, like a massive, like, steel safe. And there's, like, another area here, and closets, and bathrooms, and all that jazz. It's just very weird. I'm not complaining, though, because there's a bed, and I plan on sleeping in it right now.
The decision to sleep in a few extra hours after the previous day's brutal travel schedule was a solid one. I woke up completely refreshed for the first time in days, showered, got dressed, and made my way across the courtyard over to meet Bob at breakfast. Today would also be extremely long, but not particularly complicated, because unlike the last airplane, this one would likely be able to fly nonstop.
Well, man, it's the last one. Bob.
Ugh.
Yeah, there's ground handlers that are meeting us at door 11. And they will take us through.
They're making a movie?
Yes, I'm making a movie.
It's Bollywood?
No, it's a Hyderabad.
Oh, really? It's our flight time.
9 hours and 33 minutes.
Oh, fun. That's as far as it'll go. It really is deja vu, man.
When we pulled up to the MRO gate to grab the second airplane, the space-time continuum swung back around and slapped us across the face with deja vu, somehow eliminating the last 48 hours, which seemed endless while it was happening, but now was a blip in our minds almost as if it never happened at all. Here we were again, same time of day, same bus, same people, same clothes, identical jet, freaking weird. As we do, Bob and I swapped seats for this one. It was his turn to fly and my turn to talk on the radios. I crawled into the right seat and set it up to my liking. Because the Airbus is flown with a side stick, it's critical that the stick side armrest is adjusted just right to permit comfortable full articulation of the controls. The two-axis adjustment knobs allow us to quickly recall the setting that best works for our personal anatomy. The seat, which is electrically actuated, and the rudder pedals also get adjusted to find the perfect position. This is one of the things that makes the bus so comfortable in comparison to other aircraft.
Hey,
do it. Yep. Ground Victor Papa, Charlie, India Romeo, Bravo 1, ready for taxi.
We fired up the engines, ran our checklists and flows, and within 30 minutes of arriving at the airplane, we were on our way out for departure. At the airlines, captains and first officers typically switch between flying pilot and non-flying pilot roles each leg. It's really not any different at Nomadic, except we're all qualified as captains, and none of us want to take our flying leg in the right seat. It's just not as comfortable. For that reason, we typically swap seats and roles once per day instead of once per leg. This is simply because it's a pain to move all of our stuff from one side to the other and then readjust the seats and pedals.
Rotate. How's it read?
You're on.
Nav. Pick up a Charlie India Romeo, contact at 1-100-105.
120-125, The first aircraft landed at the Ataturk Airport on the European side of Istanbul. This plane was bound for the Sabiha Gökçen Airport, southeast of the city on the Asia side of Istanbul. Unlike the first aircraft, the combination of slightly lighter headwinds and a slightly shorter route allowed us to fly the leg nonstop. The routing was essentially the same, and with a total flight time of nearly 10 hours, we were at the absolute max endurance of an empty A320neo. Flight plan had us landing with min fuel, which includes the IFR reserves of 45 minutes above the fuel needed to get to the destination. Whenever we stretch the legs on a ferry flight, however, we have a backup plan. If the winds were a little stronger than forecast, or if a lower cruising altitude was assigned, if a major weather deviation was needed, or if the aircraft wasn't performing as expected, we needed to have a plan B. So in this case, we had the option of diverting to Cairo if need be to fly the same route as we did a few days prior. Fortunately for us, we didn't have to make that choice on this flight. The fuel tank system on the A320neo is pretty interesting. It consists of four wing tanks, two inboards and two outboards, and a center tank located in the fuselage. The engines feed from the inboard wing tanks, which are considered the mains. The fuel in the outboard wing tanks is held there until needed, typically around the top of descent, and is isolated there to provide rigidity to the wing. Eventually, that outboard fuel is transferred to the mains automatically when a set of valves is commanded to open. The center fuel on this Airbus variant is pumped to each main to maintain balance and to keep them topped off as main fuel is burned down. The entire process is automated, and there's no real need to even monitor it, but I often pull up the fuel synoptic in cruise to watch the magic happen, mainly out of boredom. Because the leg was so tight on fuel, we were monitoring it constantly, because if we did need to divert to Cairo, we'd need to decide soon so that we could notify the ground handlers through our dispatch. By the time we crossed into the UAE, it was pretty clear we wouldn't need to stop, but we did need to slow down to LRC, or long-range cruise. Sadly, this meant slowing down to about 7.2 Mach, significantly slower than our normal cruising speed of 7.9 to 8.0 Mach. We got another good view of Dubai as we passed overhead, and then out over the Persian Gulf, we heard something pretty interesting and actually got it on tape. Apparently, a light aircraft down low had trespassed into Qatar's airspace and the military was pissed.
Bearing from Doha, 340 range, 79 nautical miles, squawking mode 3, code 0052. This is Qatar military on guard, identify your service station.
074 east of Doron at 3,000 feet.
Bearing from Doha 340 range 18 square mile squatting mode 2 code 0052 altitude 2000 feet. This is Qatar military on guard. Identify yourself with safe intention.
Someone's in trouble. It ain't us.
Eventually those radio calls stopped and I assume all was rectified peacefully. The airspace down low around international boundaries, called FIRs, can be pretty complicated, and it's important that VFR general aviation pilots know and understand the restrictions, or bad things can happen. Fortunately, when operating large aircraft, we're always on an IFR flight plan and talking to ATC, so the chance of an airspace incursion for us is virtually nil. Since we started the trip later in the day with the second aircraft, the sun started to set about halfway across Saudi Arabia, and because we were traveling westbound, it lasted about 2 hours and provided gorgeous lighting to keep us entertained on this, the final leg of the adventure. We crossed Cairo again, but this time at 38,000 feet, and then made the turn to the north out over the Mediterranean Sea toward Turkey. I once again checked in with the fuel synoptic page and witnessed the outboard tanks automatically draining into the mains. This meant the end of the journey was near, so we pulled out our iPads and started briefing the nighttime approach. Aviation Navigation Publications, or NavPubs as we say, get updated constantly with changes worldwide. We use a product called Jeppesen Flight Deck Pro X, the same app and subscription service that the airlines use, and we pay a pretty penny for it. It's truly money well spent, though, and drastically simplifies the tracking and distribution of current nav data to all of our crews around the world.
You awake?
Yeah, my eyes are open and I'm necessarily awake.
We're almost there.
Finally.
Finally. One more.
A long day.
One last effort here.
This was a long week.
No doubt.
As seems to be the case more often than not, we arrived at our final landing of a long, complicated, exhausting mission to low ceilings, rain, and reduced visibility, requiring an ILS approach and all of the attention we could muster.
Continue QH 1012.
There's nothing to see outside on a nighttime approach above the clouds, so our attention is fixed to the instruments inside the cockpit. Out the window, the landing lights catch the passing clouds and would certainly be disorienting if we had to navigate visually.
2,500. Gear down.
Gear down.
While the autopilot is capable of flying all the way down to touchdown off an ILS approach, we can disengage it at any time and hand-fly the approach to landing. In almost every case, the autopilot is disconnected at 200 feet above the runway because humans land much better than the autopilot itself, but I frequently disconnect it much earlier in the approach for practice. This is not usually the case in the last landing of the day, though. Being tired adds some additional risks, and leaving the autopilot system engaged down to minimums removes that risk and simplifies things a bit.
Auto throw speed, gear, down three, green, flaps.
Though it was a little smoky down low, the ceilings were higher than forecast on this landing, and we had the runway lights in sight for the last 5 miles or so. A nice surprise because we were so ready to be done.
200, 100, 50, 40, 30, 20, retard.
With the final touchdown, this complex project, which had been in the planning and prep stages for over 2 months, was finally behind us. Both of the young NEOs were safely inducted into maintenance checks in Turkey and scheduled for redelivery to their next customer in the coming months. As it turned out, Go First Airlines shut down about 3 months later, so the timely decision to extract these birds early was a wise one for our client. The only thing left for us to do was travel home, where we'd get about a week and a half off before the next deployment, a 757 heading for China.
Oh, we're done. Now just the long ride home. Tomorrow.
Yep.
How do you feel, Bob?
I'm ready to get back home.
How much gas do we have?
1820.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Good times.
As usual on shutdown after a long flight, our phones lit up with a million messages that came in throughout the day.
Catching up on all the emails, texts, all that stuff.
Awesome. I haven't even looked at mine. I'm afraid to.
Why not? I think I'm averaging 2 or 3 hours of sleep each night. I didn't even get two last night. So hopefully, I've got a long way home.
Yeah,
I've got to go Istanbul to London and transfer London to my Phoenix flight. So I should have, 15, 16 hours of flying?
Yeah, you'll definitely get sleep.
Definitely going to get some sleep.
Or not.
Yeah, or not. And then I'll sleep all weekend when I get home.
Perfect. I'm sure your wife will love that.
Yeah, exactly.
For me, the road home went through Rome's Fiumicino Airport and then on to Philly. I slept soundly the whole way home, hoping Bob hadn't gotten me sick with his constant coughing.